Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack. And in today's installment, we're going to be visiting with KVSC's Zach Asphodel. Many of you know him as the host of our Undercurrents punk rock show every Tuesday evening. But how many of you knew that Zach played an integral role in the development of St. Cloud as a music scene? Not just through being on the radio, and not just from being in a couple of bands himself. Some of you may have already guessed, I'm talking about the Java Joints. The 90s and the early 2000s in St. Cloud had this unique, dirty, grungy, all-ages venue that became more than just a focal point of the music scene. It became a safe place for anyone, and that vibe defined St. Cloud for a little while. But Zach's role with the Java Joint was in booking music. And this is really before the internet became the tool that it is today, where everything was done through the actual mail and word of mouth. So as part of the Common Roots Festival documentary, we interviewed Zach Asphodel about his experiences with the Java Joint, and he brought forth a literal mosh pit of information. So without further ado, Zach Asphodel and the Java Joint.
Hey, Zach, how's it going?
Pretty good, Jeff. How are you?
Oh, doing all right. So we're going to talk about some music here today, I think.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Right on. So how about we start? You just give a quick, brief musical resume.
Let's see. So I grew up in St. Cloud here in the 70s into the 80s. Came of age in the mid-80s when punk rock was kind of not a thing for a while. It had become a caricature of itself. And was into mostly just whatever kind of catchy song I might hear on the radio. And then one day, a young lady in my neighborhood who had moved there not too long before, said something about a cassette she wanted to give me. Now, I'd been coloring my hair, wearing makeup and weird clothes for a little while because I didn't like people. And so she assumed that I would like this. And she said the name of the band to me, and it was something I'd never heard of. It was called the Sex Pistols.
Oh, yes.
I thought, what the hell is that? And so she said she'd give me this tape. So I went over to her house, I got the cassette, took it back to my house, and in my bedroom, I put in my little half box, my little one-speaker boom box, my cassette player, and I turned it on, and the first boot stomps of that album, kicking into the song Holidays in the Sun, made me instantly fall in love with punk rock.
Nice.
There is my musical sojourn, as I would begin it, really. Everything prior to that, the country music and the Elvis that my mom was listening to, were cool in some ways, but, you know, it was my mom, so I didn't want it. And everything else was just sort of there and, you know, whatever. That was a thing that I needed to feel deeply and did. And so that started me off. That was in 1989. And so I entered the 90s with a firm desire to find out what the hell this thing was all about and that it was still, you know, if it was still something going. So I looked into a lot of bands locally. I started hearing about things happening and started traveling, mostly spending time in Minneapolis and getting to know bands and people on the street there. And through the early 90s, I hopped freight trains and hitchhiked and all sorts of things and ended up out in Seattle, where I got into a lot of great music. At the height of grunge, of all things, I was out there not at all paying attention to it, except where it touched on certain things like the Libido Boys from Mankato and Babes in Toyland from Minneapolis, because they sort of were part of that explosion, at least in a sideways kind of way.
So, shrapnel,
they were sort of the shrapnel from the Midwest that ended up catching out in the Pacific Northwest. And so that was, again, musically. So it was mostly just being a fan and going to basement shows and house shows and things like that, and just kind of communing with people that way. It was a great way to meet people. I traveled that way and would literally jump in a car or a van when people were headed somewhere else, and mostly it was because it was a band they were either following or they were in a band. So in 94, I moved back to St. Cloud and was going back to school, and I ended up training in at KVSC to do a radio show, and a guy that I knew that had started the punk rock show here. So that got me another outlet for music, and obviously that just turned me loose on a whole lot of new things that I was able to find and discover and call out of the hidden recesses of KVSC's collection. In the fall of 95, I was going to go to see a band in St. Cloud. Another kid who had done a few shows, had booked a few shows, touring bands coming through, and didn't tell a lot of people about them, but I had managed to hear about them. There was a place downtown, the Java Joint, this coffee house that was able to occasionally host bands, and they just they said he could do a couple of shows there, so this band was going to be there. Well, it was a Sunday evening, so my friend Lee and I took it upon ourselves to bring a good crowd of other kids from Malacca, where he was from, and bring them in because we were going to just, you know, try to fill the place if we could. We got there, and there was one person in the building. It was just the barista. And she said, "Hey, do you know anything about these bands that are supposed to play tonight?" And we said, "Well, we're here to see them. So if you don't know, then I guess we don't know."
What up? Yeah.
So we sat and waited for quite a while, and no one showed up. No one called. She finally had to close. We took the very disappointed crowd that we had brought with us, and we left. Well, the same two bands, one was from Minneapolis, the Viceroys, and one was from Lexington, Kentucky, a band called 9 Pound Hammer. We're playing in Minneapolis the next night, and I was supposed to work, and I had homework as I was in school full time. But I said, "Well, you know what? I'm gonna actually do something uncharacteristic, because at the time I didn't want to ever take time away from that because I was paying for it, obviously, and didn't work a lot." But I went out, said, "I'm gonna take the night off work. We're gonna go down and see this show." And so he and I drove to the cities, and we went to the 7th Street entry, and we accosted 9 Pound Hammer. We found the singer, and said, "Hey, Scott, where were you last night?" And he says, "Oh, we were just down here doing nothing. Why? Was there something going on?" I said, "Yeah, we were waiting for you to come play." He said, "Well, we heard it was canceled, so we didn't show up." He said, "We would have loved to play a show last night if we'd have known." And I'll cut out as much of this as I can, but basically he said, "Let us know next time we're on tour. We'll get in touch with you. Let us know if you can help, and we'll come and play a show for you." He said, we'll do it even if all we had was our amps and no vocal ability or whatever. All you had was a room. We'll come and play for you." I was like, "That's great." Same thing with the Viceroys. They were like, "Hey, yeah, great. We're only an hour away. We'll come up and play." So I talked to the young man who had booked the show, who ended up, it turned out what he had done is he had gotten a job out of town up in Grand Forks, Minnesota, or North Dakota, and left town and called the bands that he had booked and said, "Yeah, the shows are off because I'm not going to be able to be there," but didn't tell anyone else. Didn't tell the venues, didn't tell anybody else. So I said, "Hey, if you need help, I can do something. I don't know what I'm doing, but just tell me what to do. I'll write a PA or whatever. I'll put up flyers, you know, things like that." He said, "Great." He gives me the phone numbers and the dates of all the bands that he had booked, and I didn't hear from him for 6 months. So I started calling all the bands and said, "I don't know what I'm doing, but I really would love to see music happen in this town, and I've seen it happen in other places, so you tell me what you need now. I'm going to do my best to get something going." And about half of them said, "We'll take our chances and find someplace else." And I said, "Okay, here's some places to look that I'll refer you." And here are the other half that said, "We'll take a shot. We're on tour. We're just, you know, we're just hoping to play in front of people. We're happy with whatever works." That started me off. And so by the middle of October, this was all in September, so the middle of October, so I had started with a bunch of bands that came in on tour and trying to find local bands. And anybody with a guitar and two songs or whatever, I just said, "Okay, let's put you on stage. You can open the show. Bring your friends. We'll have a good time. Just start putting the word out that we're going to be doing shows here, and it's going to be all ages. There's no bar scene. This is going to be unrestricted age-wise." And that was a big thing for me, is I wanted to make sure that it wasn't, you know, that attitude. We already had enough bars doing music, and most of these bands didn't want to play bars anyway, so it was great. So we ended up kind of finishing the passel of bands that were passed off to me, and I added a few, and then I talked to the owner of the Java Joint, the second owner of the Java Joint, named Roxanne, who said, "Yes, I'll let you do a regular thing here because it's bringing in business for me, and you know, it seems like people like it, so you know, be a good business move for me, and let's see how it goes." So we started doing every Friday and Saturday night. I brought in, you know, as much as I could musically. Other nights I did poetry readings and things like that, and tried to just fill every Friday and Saturday so there's always something going. And that led to 2 years of just constant activity for me. I ended up stopping out of school and saying, "I can go back later because this is just exciting and new, and I want to do something, and it's picking up momentum." So all of the young kids that were finding a place, they were gravitating to it because they said, "Hey, nobody's ever done anything like this for us or for anyone, so let's keep it going." So I recruited some to put up flyers and things like that, and you know, just kind of became just a mecca for disenfranchised little freaks like me. I was in my mid-20s and decided that it was time to have something like it.
You're tuned to 88.1 FM, KVSC, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. Today we're talking with KVSC's Zach Asphodel about way back in the day and the Java Joint and what an all-ages venue can do to a community. It's subtle, but very, very powerful.
Where were we?
You know, I don't honestly remember.
Somewhere to the Java Joint.
That's where I always was. You know, it's kind of funny because I'm going to back up a little bit here because I was talking about kind of the genesis of music in town for me was kind of the Java Joint. But really, actually, it actually happened before that. And there was a show, and I found this picture, some of the pictures that I sent you, from a show that we put together. It was me and Mark Mon and Tony Visti and the guys in the band New Flower Horizon. Admittedly a terrible name, they knew that, but they were a band that was formed out of the ashes of me not being able to play guitar, Mark picking it up, and he and Tony getting together with Tony's brother Doug, who was older and had taught him how to play. So they'd formed this band. What happened is in February 1990 we put together a bill with a band from the cities called The Obscene. And they were a punk band. I don't remember who hooked us up with them, how this happened, but they came up and we got a band from St. Cloud here, mostly students, called Super Big Funwig. And they were kind of replacements meets Bob Marley was the way I would put them. But they were a fun bunch of guys, and they actually played the show at the Press Bar. They let us do a Sunday afternoon in February for a matinee show. And it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday. We had all these kids in there just getting rowdy and crazy. And that was kind of the first real show that I helped put together ever. And then after that, we did a couple other ones in weird places like the Eden Valley Legion. And went out there with the Nothing Heads and New Flower Horizon and Faulty Wiring, which was Stacy Machula and Josh Richardson, who is now in Flavor Crystals and various other projects and things like that. So there's some history there that's still, you know, carrying forward. But that was like the DIY thing. I mean, literally had no idea what we were doing. Just, okay, let's put together a bill and invite some people in. So we did that, and then, like I said, then the Java Joint sort of came in, and that was a focal point for everybody to say, oh, there was one place we could do this now, we could do something different, and then it went from there. So when the 95 period that I think I had described, basically where I sort of took a bunch of shows and learned on the fly and made that into something, building it up from that nothingness of random, haphazard, who knows if there's anything really going to ever happen after this one is done, to every Friday and Saturday night, anybody that I could find with any songs or anything ready to go, let's put this on the stage. We'll get a regular thing going, have your friends come out and support you. Then hopefully we'll build that up. You can start opening for bigger bands if we can get them in. And I started putting the word out to bands in the cities that I knew and people that I knew that knew bands, and just built it from there. And it took off. And like I said, then we had bands coming out of the woodwork here in St. Cloud, you know, high school kids with, you know, three songs. They'd come in and they would say, hey, we've got a demo tape, here you go, here's our practice space boombox recording. And that was all it took. It went pretty well, pretty quickly. I'd say by the end of 95, and this started in October, by the end of 95 we had every Friday and Saturday night we had a regular show going, and it was noted that we were doing so. Parents were calling to ask if things were okay and if the kids could come there and that kind of thing. And it was really nice because I think the legitimacy of having an actual venue versus doing something ourselves and having it be, you know, just we're renting a hall kind of thing. It was really a big part of what helped build it up, because then, you know, we could do that regular thing. So that was my sort of what I'll call my stamp on the St. Cloud music scene, was those 2 years from October of 97 to October, or October 95 to October 97. And I can tell you the exact day and who played the last show that I ever officially booked. A band from San Francisco called Ain't came to play with Phantasmagoria from here in St. Cloud, or actually from Annandale. And that was just a phenomenal show, October 11th of 97. It was just so much fun, big send-off. And then after that, the manager of the Java Joint, Jennifer Nelson, a good friend of mine who had been there the whole time, had basically learned everything that I was doing and was just as much a part of it. And so she took over booking for a while. And I think she took over first, and then after that, Luke Vandrovic, who was at times KVSC music director, Undercurrents punk rock radio show host with me, and various other fun things that he did. But he also did some of this. So they carried it on for several more years, and that was a very cool thing because that meant that I could finally just relax and actually go to a show occasionally and help when I wanted to, but not have to be the one
in charge,
wrecking myself to be at the forefront of it all. So that was a really high compliment, I felt like, too, because that meant that we had something real enough that other people were willing to put enough effort into to keep it going. So that was a good thing for me as far as, you know, all the effort put in, knowing that if I was stepped away, it wasn't going to fall apart. And, you know, also a little bit of an ego check, knowing that it wasn't just me, you know, it was a true community effort. And that was something I was really happy about too. So we took a lot of the next few years and sort of, you know, came up with some ideas and said, hey, okay, you know, what other bands could we bring in and who could we get back and those kind of things, and kind of had some return touring bands, which was nice, you know, to have multiple appearances from out-of-state bands and things like that. So that got some big notoriety. So one of my favorite stories I like to share, though, was people say, well, you know, how far did this go? You know, where was your, you know, what was your favorite show? And I don't know that I have a favorite show because there were so many good ones and so many great bands that I saw that sometimes they were playing to me and one other person, or literally an empty room other than me or whatever. But one show in particular always stands out because a friend of mine who had lived here in St. Cloud for just a short time in 1989 moved to the cities, helped start an organization called Profane Existence in the cities, which has been revived and is still going now. News, information, politics, and music was kind of their whole thing from a anarchist punk rock perspective. Well, he had gotten in touch with a band down in Argentina. He used to hop freight trains down to Argentina and spend the winters down there. So when he came back at one point, he said, hey, these guys want to come up and play here sometime. Do you want to put a show on at the Java Joint? I was like, hell yeah. Argentinian punk rock, you know, in St. Cloud. Nobody's going to believe this. Well, I got that to happen. On that same night, a band from England was coming over to tour and had gotten in touch with people in the cities and said, hey, we'd like to play a show there. So it worked out that we could put the two of them on stage together. So we had an English anarcho-punk band coming over to play with an Argentinian anarcho-punk band. And on that same night, I had a call from a completely random, unrelated booking agent with an Australian band touring, looking for a show that night. And I felt so guilty because I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to come up with enough money to pay any of them, even one of them, enough to really make this work. So I turned it down. I turned down that third band. And I kind of now wish I hadn't, because I could tell the agent was desperate enough to, you know, be like, look, we just want a show. And he said that once or twice, I think, something to that effect, but basically said, you know, no, we don't need a lot of money, we just want to play a place. And I was like, well, I really feel like you should find some place that's going to be better suited and give you a better thing. So I had this international bill that I could have had three different continents, much less three, you know, three different countries or states represented, in a hole in the wall in the middle of nowhere that everybody wrote off as being, oh, it's just St. Cloud kind of thing. So I said, well, you know, this is a thing that can happen here. So as far as I'm concerned, the sky is the limit, and there's what we're going to do. So that was my favorite single kind of convergence of this whole thing. And the power of putting the word out that we do well. You know, we did a good thing. We treated the bands well, and they wanted to come here. So our name was getting passed around enough that built it up. So I always look at the back end of those things and think, okay, now how did a band from Australia that none of the other people that I know get my name and number and call, and where did that come from? So I was constantly trying to put that out to the, you know, the kids that were coming to the shows and things like that, and just tell them, you know, this isn't some miracle thing. This is hard work, but it's about possibilities. It's about the idea that we all can make this happen, and this is just exactly what, you know, what I want to see happen and you guys should do next. So,
because it's like what you said, having that space, that actual space, brings a legitimacy to the whole thing. Yeah. And then, you know, that is the difference between renting out a hall or renting out the red carpet or the press or whatever. You've got a space, and then, you know, once you get a few things going and the word spreads, and, you know, you know, I don't want to wonder about, you know, how social media has changed that, but I think it's maybe made it worse because, you know, what you're saying, there's a lot of hard work. So somebody remembers your name, remembers, hey, this is the contact for this place is pretty cool. And then that spreads through the people that they're actively working hard,
yeah,
trying to book shows for people.
And I tried to make sure I did the same for anybody that I knew, you know, in the cities or wherever. You know, I'd get bands coming through from other towns, and it'd be like, well, here's who does shows in our town or our area or whatever. So I would always say, oh, great, let me hold on to that for the next band that's looking for shows. And I would pass those names on. And so, you know, again, it just becomes one of those, like I say, a true DIY, you know, or I guess D-I-O, D-O, huh?
Yeah.
Do it ourselves kind of mentality, because there was nobody else that was going to do it for us. So we just had to do that, you know, and make sure that the thing is, I think one of my favorite conversations I ever witnessed was two different bands on tour came and played. One was from San Francisco. They were called the Rudiments. They had been Los Rudiments, and they were kind of ska punk and moved into more of a straight hardcore band kind of thing. Been around for a while. Dill Records, the famous Skank and Pickle label, put out some of their stuff. And so they were big. This was back in the mid-90s, and when ska was, the revival was really happening. But they had played together with a band from Austin, Texas that I booked called Gals Panic. And they were both very good and, you know, just enough different from each other, but in that same realm and kind of knew who each other were. So I remember they stayed at my house, and sitting in the living room with all of the band members sprawled all over the place, the one guy in the one band that did the booking and then the actual booking agent for the Rudiments sat together and just did this amazing kibitz session where they, like, you know, traded names and who's this guy and how's this one work and is this promoter worth it or oh I've heard bad things or you know, yeah, just did this.
Who do you
amazing,
know in Kentucky?
And, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, who do you know here and who do you like for this one and how do they pay well and all? I mean, just this amazing conversation that I got to be part of. And I asked, I was like, do you guys mind if I just sit and just listen to you, because this is awesome? They're like, oh, absolutely, you know, and if you know anybody, let us know. And I'm like, oh, you want my input? Oh,
okay.
You guys are like up here, you know, where I'm, you know, like, okay, I'll tell you what I know. But it was really nice because seeing people operate on what to me was a professional level in a very much DIY, you know, in that, you know, what, you know, kind of underground scuzzy, you know, like we're taping together chords kind of way, you know. It was just like, wow, you can be a professional. You don't have to wear a suit and tie and look like, you know, whatever, and have, you know, like Sony behind you or whatever. It was like, it was a totally new thing for me to consider myself a professional. You know, I was like, I kind of did, you know, I think that's what I am really. But, you know, without putting the label on it, mm-hmm. That was one of the things. So I think that was another thing too, is that I also could see that the punk rock professional was a true thing. There are stories, I mean, Screeching Weasel, you know, Ben Weasel was the punk rock businessman. He was known that way. That was his big thing. You know, he got Screeching Weasel CDs into Best Buy. They had the TV commercial back in the mid-90s where it was like, if you've got Screeching Weasel, I'll get a job. You know, the punk rocker ends up working at the burger joint, because they actually did, and he actually managed to get that on a small independent label. So I was like, okay, this is interesting. I'm seeing these kinds of things. You know, my lines started blurring too as far as music goes. You know, like, okay, what does selling out mean, and what does this mean, and, you know, other things. But what I kind of want to tie that into is, again, the idea of St. Cloud being a breeding ground for bands that wanted to go to that next step. I was there to say, okay, you can do some of these things and become the next thing you want to do, and I want to help you get there. Once you're there, I'm pretty much going to go to the next band that wants to do that, though, because you guys will be off in a different realm, and I'm cool staying with this. So I don't want to be the one to jump to that next plateau. That's not my thing. I'm really happy being down here ground level doing this stuff. So I really enjoyed that. I mean, moving forward after that, when the Java Joint was sold, and the second owner, Micah, Roxanne Micah, sold it to the owners of what had been the Java Z, so Troy and Sean. And that whole thing, that was a wonderful thing. And again, the Java Joint was the first one, the Java Z crowd, and to some extent, I don't know how far out this spread, but basically some of the rivalry that grew up out of that was sort of frustrating for me too, because again, I think I talked about this before, but there was some of that attitude of, why, you know, or, you know, don't you want to see, you know, them fail or whatever, or, you know, why would you, you know, support them? And I said, because I want options in town, and healthy competition's a good thing, and there's more places to see bands and all ages venues in general are hard to come by. So that, to have two in town that are doing regular music, it's fantastic. I wanted to see more of that. So when they unfortunately had had to close, not getting into the details of that, but when they had to shut their doors and could not find another space then to open up in, eventually they did buy the job joint from Roxanne when she was looking to get out of the business and took it over. And so again, another resurgence there and a new sort of era of the Java joint happened. That was in 2001. I want to say that was in 01.
Yeah, because I moved to town in 03, and that's when I ran into the Java joint, and Troy and Sean were running it then.
The I remember, I think it was, it happened before 9/11.
Yeah.
I'm remembering this for some reason, but it was one of those things, again, it was a kind of a traumatic thing for a lot of us because it was done very, very hushed and behind the scenes. And so there was a lot of, you know, a lot of hurt feelings and a lot of, now the Java Z kids are going to be there and it's not our place anymore. So there was a lot of that. So I, again, trying to transcend a lot of that pettiness and the small details that when you're, you know, when you're 15 can feel like the end of the world.
Yeah.
I totally understand that. But it was just, it was kind of a, it was kind of frustrating for me too, because I felt like I had been part of something that now I wasn't. It was like, now I'm just like another guy, just, you know, standing off to the side or whatever. So I didn't go to shows for a long time, but I started going then because they were booking enough shows that I wanted to see. And, you know, their style was different than what mine had been and Jen's and Luke's had been and that sort of thing. And again, kind of kept it fresh in a lot of ways. And just like when the shows that I booked, there were a lot of them that I, you know, wouldn't necessarily have attended if I hadn't been involved. So it's okay. I liked that and I wanted to see more of that. So there was a good thing going there until one more downturn in activity led to whatever the reason was that they ended up having to shut their doors in 2007. I can't believe it's been that long already, so it's crazy. But that was the it's so weird to me because being so involved in the Java Joint, it was only 2 years.
Yeah.
And you know, if you look at that, obviously that's a blip, you know, that's like nothing. But for me, that was like, I mean, that's an entire lifetime I lived in those 2 years to be so involved in it. So that was the thing. It's like I try to think of what's happening now, you know, that I've missed in the last 6 months that to somebody else is like, that's their life. That's their whole thing. And I really love that. And that's part of why I love being here at KVSC and doing things on the air, because I'm hoping that there's somewhat of a focal point there. You know, the show inspires somebody to keep doing something. And it's just, you know, I keep doing it because I can't get away from it. It's too far into my blood. I don't know what else to do sometimes. You know, it's like Tuesday comes up and it's like, I gotta be on the air if I can. You know, that's it's a good thing to be somewhat in touch. And also I think sometimes it's kind of nice to be kind of apart from it all and sort of be able to look objectively and see what's happening. So
and then be pleasantly surprised at things that pop up. So
yes, yeah. I keep hearing from bands randomly that are like, hey, you know, we'd love to get some airtime. Or somebody else says, hey, have you heard of this band? And it's like, they've been around for a year and a half and I've never heard of them. It's like, oh yeah, they play here all the time or wherever, you know. And it's like, okay, give me stuff, I'll play it. I'll definitely put it on the air, or at least, you know, pass it on to somebody that will, you know. So it's very cool. It's very cool to, I mean, know that it's like, even in down times, and everything has its, you know, rises and falls, the crests and troughs of everything, there are going to be times where it's going to be great, and there are going to be times where it's going to be slim to no good things happening, or at least that's the way it feels. But there's always something somewhere that comes up, and you know, it's like a band will start and somebody will just get an inspiration to do a show or whatever. So that's what keeps me going, and that's what got me started in the first place. Somebody had a spark, you know. So
I think that's what's been keeping everybody going, to tell you the truth.
Absolutely. I just want to say that I am super, super proud to be a part of a nothing little town that's made some good things happen.
Right on. We've been talking with KVSC's Zach Asphodel here on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. There's a continually developing project through the Common Roots Festival about documenting live music and the various live music venues in and around the St. Cloud area. And you can look for some of the links to these projects on our website at kvsc.org. But if you're a business owner considering opening your doors to music, especially the all-ages variety, get a hold of us here at KVSC. Like I always said, live music,
You need it just as much as it needs you. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and The Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of Amper's Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.